Just about every place has a local hero, a hometown kid who grew up to make their mark on the world. In Yellow Springs, Ohio, one hometown hero made her mark on the world of children's literature. Here's Virginia Hamilton, along with actor James Earl Jones, in a 1987 reading from The People Could Fly, her award-winning book of African-American folktales.
They say the people could fly. Say that long ago in Africa, some of the people knew magic, and they would walk upon the air like climbing upon a gate, and they flew like blackbirds over the fields, black, shiny wings flapping against the blue up there.
Then many of the people were captured for slavery. The ones that could fly shed their wings. They couldn't take their wings across the water on the slave ships. Too crowded, don't you know? The folks were full of misery then, got sick with the up and down of the sea. So they forgot about flying when they could no longer breathe the sweet scent of Africa.
Say the people who could fly kept their power, although they shed their wings. They kept their secret magic in the land of slavery. They looked the same as the other people from Africa who had been coming over, who had dark skin. Say you couldn't tell any more one who could fly from one who couldn't. One such who could was an old man.
Although she passed away in 2002, Virginia Hamilton's legacy continues through her large and varied body of work written for young people. It's also been kept alive by her husband, Arnold Adolph, by her children, Lee and Jamie, and by the recent publication of a biography for young readers. In the WYSO archives, we have two recordings we'd like to share in this very special edition of Rediscovered Radio. One is from 1981. It's most of an interview with Virginia Hamilton, and it features dramatic readings of her work. It also reveals the inspiration her hometown provided for her writing. Here's former WYSO News Director Willis Seidenberg over three decades ago.
When Virginia Hamilton began writing, she reached back into her heritage for much of her material. Hamilton's grandfather was a fugitive slave who, by way of the Underground Railroad, settled in Yellow Springs. The Hamiltons still make the village their home, and Virginia's rich childhood years gave her much to draw on when she later began writing children's literature. To date, Virginia Hamilton has written more than a dozen books, with more on the way. She's what you might call a Yellow Springs success story, having won international acclaim for her children's stories, which captivate adults as well. Being born and raised in the village, I wondered what are Virginia Hamilton's earliest memories of Yellow Springs.
My earliest are not of the village. My earliest are of our farm, I would say. We had a small farm along Dayton Street, and my uncle had a farm across the street, another uncle behind his, so that end of town, I felt, was mine. I could roam for seemingly hours and still be on family property. So it was very nice. I have very pleasant memories of my childhood, of clothes flapping on the line, of berry picking, you know, all those wonderful things. And it was quite true. It sounds like a cliche. But
how do you think growing up in Yellow Springs shaped your writing and the kinds of things that you were writing about, especially when you were writing children's literature?
Well, most of my books have rural settings. One of them, The Planet of Junior Brown, takes place in New York, and that comes from my years that I lived there. But most of them have country or hill or river backgrounds, and I think that has influenced, Yellow Springs has influenced that, the rural community, in the background of my stories.
The other digitized tape is an interview with Virginia Hamilton's husband, poet and anthologist Arnold Adolph. It was recorded in 1983, and in it he speaks his poems as only he can do.
All the colors of the race are in my face and just behind my face, behind my eyes, inside my head, and inside my head I give myself a place at the end of a long line forming itself into a circle, and I am holding out my hands. I think the real color is behind the color, that skin on my face is for the cold mornings and the cool breezes of some summer afternoons. Under that skin and under that face is the real race.
These recordings give us a glimpse into the lives of two people who quietly made their home in a little village in the Midwest and raised their kids. all the while creating great change in the literary world. Beginning with the publication of her first novel, Zeelee, in 1967, Virginia Hamilton wrote from an African-American perspective, from what she called the experience of a parallel culture. She refused to use the term minority because she felt it minimized the experiences of non-white people. But she also told stories of the universal experiences of childhood and young adulthood in ways that transcended race. Arnold, too, was breaking new ground in literature. His poetry anthology, I Am the Darker Brother, was published in 1968. It was one of the first compilations of black poets' work created especially for young people. Together, they blazed a path through the publishing industry that opened the way for others to follow. When WYSO's Willa Seidenberg talked with her 35 years ago, Virginia Hamilton had already been recognized with the most prestigious award in children's literature. She had won the John Newbery Medal in 1975 for M.C. Higgins the Great, a coming-of-age story set in the Appalachian Mountains. And she was the first black woman to receive the award. By the time of this interview, she'd also been recognized with the Edgar Allan Poe Award, the Boston Globe Horn Book Award, the Coretta Scott King Award, and the National Book Award, making her one of the most honored authors in children's literature. Many more awards would follow, including the Hans Christian Andersen Medal in 1992 and a MacArthur Fellowship in 1995. But in the archival audio, Seidenberg, who today is professor of professional practice in the Annenberg School of Communications and Journalism at the University of Southern California, learned of Virginia Hamilton's journey to becoming a children's author. It wasn't what Virginia set out to do, at least not at first.
Why did you start writing children's literature?
I didn't. I majored in writing here at Antioch, and I was simply writing stories, and for many years tried to get published. I had an agent. I had a long correspondence with The New Yorker about stories. I always wanted to be a New Yorker writer, but I couldn't quite fit into that mold. But they were very nice and very encouraging, and I was writing in adult stories. And I had a friend who went to Antioch who was working for Macmillan and happened to be working in the children's book department. She remembered my stories from Antioch and said they would make good children's books. And I said, what's a children's book? Because I didn't know. So one of those stories, which was called The West Field, became my first book, Zeelee. And I had no problem getting published once I started writing children's books.
So you just adapted what you had written?
That's right, really. It took me about a year to understand what a children's book was, and after that it wasn't too difficult.
Virginia spoke, too, of the impact of her African-American identity on writing and storytelling.
I don't think you can, if you're a black writer writing about black subject matter, you can stop from being symbolic. It just simply happens, you know. And any problems that I might have in this society comes through my literature. I don't even have to try. It's part of the stories that I tell, you know. I believe that. I don't go about trying to put messages in. They're just there.
Virginia Hamilton was a highly successful author. She wrote 41 books, from folktales to fantasies, mysteries to biographies. She traveled widely, speaking at literary conferences and award ceremonies all over the world. But that wasn't always the case.
Writers frequently say that the most difficult thing in the beginning is getting published, trying to get somebody who will publish
you.
That's
right.
Did you find that, that's a strike against you in the just to start out with, that you
right.
have to try and...
It is extremely difficult, and it is probably the worst system I've ever encountered in any kind of business. You know, you would think you would make it easy for people to get in it, but it's not. It's very difficult. It's still the kind of business that if you know somebody, it's a lot easier. Now, I couldn't get an agent for about 5 years, and I couldn't get an agent because I wasn't published. You know, and it just went around and around. I couldn't get published because I didn't have an agent. Yeah, but it's just extremely difficult, and we help a lot of people, the people in this town who have gotten published, because we knew where to get the stuff in. You still have to have the goods, but sometimes you have it and you can't find the right publisher, or you don't know where to go.
You know? So as a writer who has been successful in getting published and has become a successful writer, you feel a responsibility to help other writers
yes.
who are coming
along. Oh, yes.
The interview also touched on Virginia's creative process and her unique genius in bringing forth her stories.
I'd like to just ask you about the your process of writing? What is your process from the beginning of the germ of the idea for the story?
Yeah, what I was doing in Chicago yesterday, telling everybody about the creative process. And you end up saying, I don't know how I do it. All I can say is that suddenly I have an idea and I don't know where it comes. Or I have a picture, or I have a image, you know, and I begin to play around with it. Usually it's an idea. I have my editor, who is the editor-in-chief at William Morrow, Green Willow Books, says that it's not true, that this is a story I've made up. I really start with characters. And she says, whether I'm aware of it or not, I have a character in my head first. And I've denied it for 10 years, but she's probably right. I'm slowly coming around, you know, trying to slow down this. This is a lightning swift process. It's something that you don't really think about, that it's happening. It just starts happening. And I think she's absolutely right. I start with a character, and characters define plot and action. They define the book. It's what your characters do that make a story. It's not the story first and then the characters, I think.
I always feel funny when I ask any kind of artist, writer, or artist right. about that creative process, because I think it's hard for people who aren't, who don't have that.
It really is.
Creativity to understand. I just keep thinking when I talk to people, how do you do it? You know,
that's
how
right.
do you get
and
it?
It's very difficult. Like my theory is that if you have an idea someplace, you also have the mechanism for creating a whole system for that idea. And so far, it's been so. You know, but the creative process is extremely elusive, and I don't know how you can ever explain it, although that's what I do all the time. I go around the country trying to people say, well, where do you get your ideas and how do you do it? And those are the hardest questions, because I can't tell them, you know, really. I can only do it. I suppose if I could tell them, I couldn't do it. You know?
These decades-old interviews permit us to gauge how far we've come and how far we have yet to go. In the late 1960s, the number of authors writing books for children of color were few, so few books existed in which black and brown children could see themselves represented. Together, Virginia Hamilton and Arnold Adolph worked to change that. Back in 1983, Marcy Silman, now an arts and culture reporter for KUOW in Seattle, was a producer at WYSO when she interviewed Arnold Adolph, then a robust 48 years old. From singing out his poems to critiquing the publishing world, Arnold was a lively interview subject.
Well, let's become serious now. You talked a little bit about, before we started this, and during the course of it, about the difficulty that any children's author has in getting his or her works published and actually put out there for an audience. And maybe you could personalize a little bit and tell me.
Well, Virginia and I were fortunate. We had the horses. We had worked hard. She went to Antioch. She went to Ohio State. I went to City College in Columbia. We spent many years in New York writing and studying and working with people. I worked with a superb Filipino-American poet named Jose Garcia Villa, who was a protege of Sitwell's. And we all have our influences. But by the 1960s, during the Civil Rights Movement, when things began to open up in America for non-mainstream groups because of agitation and activity, blacks becoming more visible, people talking about the white problem rather than the black problem, we were there and we were ready, and I had my anthologies, Virginia her novels, and the publishing industry was rolling and expanding. Because of my interracial marriage and my children who are black and white, I'm interested in that duality, in that combination of cultures, and beyond just black and white, to all cultures in a pluralistic, humanistic society. And so two of my most important books are called Black is Brown is Tan and All the Colors of the Race, which deal specifically with what it is to be an interracial young person in the world. And so a book like Black is Brown is Tan, which was the first book, poetry or prose, really to deal with an interracial family in literature for children, is used by the vast and various combinations of peoples that we have in America, which is exciting and wonderful and said as well, because there should be one with a black father and a white mother, and one with a Chinese and Korean and Vietnamese and Cambodian and Southern Appalachian and Northwest American Indian mixtures that we find any and everywhere around America. Of course, it's enabled me to encounter many of these people as they come up and see me when we meet and talk. But I would hope that the adults in the audience and the adults who work with the children and the children would take some of our books and say, I can do it different, I can do it better, and use them as foundation stones and go on and do their own writing from their own experiences. Black is brown, is tan, is girl, is boy, is nose, is face, is all the colors of the race, is dark, is light, singing songs in singing night, kiss big woman, hug big man, black is brown, is tan, this is the way it is for us, this is the way we are. I am mom and mommy, mama, mama, moo, meanie, ma, and mom again with mighty hugs and hairbrush mornings catching curls. Later we sit by the window and your head is up against my chest. We read and tickle and sing the words into the air.
Today, Arnold Adolph at 82 is no less engaged in artistic and social activism, and he still writes poetry with a new book just headed to the publisher. When I spoke with him in the summer of 2017, he told stories of growing up in the Bronx, of hanging out in Greenwich Village with jazz bassist Charles Mingus, and of meeting and falling for a country girl from Ohio.
That's all she wrote. It was beyond love at first sight. It was cosmic and spiritual and everything that I didn't even know existed at the time. 2 days later, I went to have dinner with my mother up in the Bronx on the way to the National Guard Armory, where I was a member of the Guard. And she said, what's new? I said, I met this woman, she's black, and I'm going to marry her. And that was the end of the conversation, as far as I was concerned. As far as they were concerned, it was another, you know, cause for bringing in psychiatrists and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Arnold Adolph continues to embody the legacy he created with Virginia, and not only through his poetry.
So I always end my emails, the struggle continues. And it really is a continuing struggle from when we became aware in the 50s and 60s to now and to the young people coming in. Extraordinary number of talented, brilliant, talented African-American, not even saying, you know, Asian, Hispanic. You add those in, there are dozens of extraordinary people writing for young people and illustrating for young people. It's the richest of times, I think, really, since the 60s spilling over into the 70s. And for me, that's wonderful, deciding to, after she died, just make my home here in Yellow Springs, but to stay here, but with Facebook, which is lovely. I can't do Twitter, but with or anything else, I can barely do Facebook. But it keeps me in touch with the next generation and the next generation, and occasionally conferences that we go to. I'll put a plug in for the Kent State Conference.
The Virginia Hamilton Conference on Multicultural Literature for Youth at Kent State University, founded in 1985, is the longest-running event focusing on such literature for young people. Usually held every spring, in 2018 it will team with a literacy conference in Northeast Ohio for a mid-October date. The conference honors authors, poets, illustrators, and books for youth that celebrate the rich diversity of this country. In 2016, the Arnold Adolph Prize in Poetry was added to the slate of awards bestowed at the conference, encouraging emerging multicultural poets as well as those writing for different age groups. But there's also a living legacy that Virginia Hamilton and Arnold Adolph have given the world, their two children, Lee and Jamie. That's operatic soprano Lee Adolph, known professionally as Lee Hamilton. She's lived in West Germany for the past 18 years, performing widely in Europe and the United States, and now she's teaching young singers. Speaking from her home in Berlin, Lee offers her memories of the parents who encouraged her life as an artist.
Collectively and individually, they broke unbelievable barriers in children's literature, also in poetry. You know, my father, he was one of the first, if not the first, I don't know if that's 100% sure, but if he wasn't the first, he was one of the first who was anthologizing people of color's poetry, you know, starting in the 60s. That didn't exist, poets of color, you know, and Black, Hispanic, Native American, Asian, it didn't exist. And my mother, as a children's book author, winning every award you can win and getting these big, later, this wasn't in the beginning, but let's say later, probably this would have been in the 80s, definitely, getting these big multi-book contracts from Scholastic and good money, that didn't exist. And it certainly didn't exist for a Black woman. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it was just didn't. She was a pioneer in this arena, and my father fought for her. He was always her agent and negotiated. She got to be the artist and didn't have to get her hands dirty, and he was back there making the sausages, if you know what I mean. You know, he fought for her. He negotiated those contracts. He fought them tooth and nail for every cent that she got, and he never took no as an answer. Now, people said all kinds of things about him. I don't care, because whatever Virginia Hamilton wanted, he made sure she got it. And that isn't just love, but it's an unbelievable amount of respect for this person's incredible talent and hard work, you know. I mean, I just think that they broke barriers as a biracial couple, let's say. You know, when they got married, there were still something like, 20-some-odd states where that would be illegal? And then on a professional level, I mean, the things that they did just had not been done before. And now, you know, there's still not enough people of color's work being represented and published, but it is infinitely better than it was 30 years ago, 35, 40 years ago, you know. And I think, for me, that's one of the things that makes me most proud. You know, of course, all the awards and recognition are wonderful, but that they really help to pave a way for people, for artists, for writers, you know, now, and that these things are possible and not out of reach because they did it.
Brother Jamie is also a trained musician, as well as an award-winning writer. But Jamie found his true calling as a middle school teacher. At a school event in October of 2017, his eighth grade students presented multimedia projects examining race and revolution.
This is a project that focuses on the flashpoints, as we call them, in recent American history, where you have the murder of unarmed African Americans by police officers.
Growing up as the son of two famous writers, he saw the creative process firsthand.
I learned mainly by example, you know, watching my mother every morning, going to her study, not physically locking herself in, but going in with a cup of coffee. And I've told this observation for years. When I was a little kid, she would walk in with a cup of coffee, and then, you know, 4 or 5 hours later, or 6 hours later, it would seem, she would have pages and pages of writing. So as a small child, I thought if you poured coffee on paper, you got creative writing. So, no, I saw the creative process up close. It was a part of me before I even could probably, you know, really realize or talk about it. And then seeing my dad work on poetry upstairs, they worked full-time at home, so there was a lot of access to them.
Jamie has been recognized as a finalist for the Teaching Tolerance Award for Excellence in Teaching, sponsored by the Southern Poverty Law Review. And he talked about the impact of being a teacher.
There was a point where I was traveling as a traveling author, speaking around the country, where I just realized that it wasn't enough, because I would go into schools and then I would leave after a day or two and then I wouldn't know what happened to the kids. So then it became, well, I need to be on the scene and stay, and what can I do to have more of a lasting effect?
But Arnold and the family aren't the only ones keeping Virginia's memory present and pertinent. Author Julie K. Rubini's Virginia Hamilton, America's Storyteller, published in 2017, is geared toward the young people for whom Virginia wrote. Rubini spoke of the continuing importance of Virginia Hamilton's legacy.
her legacy is in that incredible body of work that still lives on the shelves of school and public libraries. And I think Arnold's efforts, and through their children, their efforts, and through my efforts in writing the biography, and so many other educators and librarians who embrace Virginia's work, the legacy will be to continue to create this awareness of both her work as well as Arnold's work. Her legacy is so even beyond her works. It's that legacy of trying to help other authors have their works published. It's in the legacy of creating incredible stories for children that were unlike any works previously and unlike many works that are out there today. Her works are so varied. You could read one of her folk tales and then read House of Dies Drear, M.C. Higgins, and one of her biographies. I mean, she was an amazing writer, and I felt very honored to share her story.
Virginia Hamilton blazed a trail for many of the authors of color who write for young people today, like Kwame Alexander, Jason Reynolds, Jacqueline Woodson, Tony Medina. Along with Octavia E. Butler, Virginia Hamilton is also credited with inspiring speculative fiction authors like Enetia Okorafor and others writing fantasy stories that draw on the folklore of the African diaspora.
And in that particular sense, we can look at her as a type of literary foremother who really helped pave a way and opened up the literary landscape in order for more diverse voices to contribute to the speculative fiction category.
That's Dr. Sharon Lynette Jones, professor of English and director of African and African American Studies at Wright State University.
I think that Virginia Hamilton was truly groundbreaking. I think that the way in which her work engages with class, race, gender, and other elements really has set up a foundation for a lot of contemporary writers.
As is fitting for a great American writer, Virginia Hamilton's papers, her correspondence and manuscripts are archived at the Library of Congress. Also, the extensive research library collected by Virginia and Arnold over the years was donated to Wright State University's Belinga Black Cultural Resources Center in 2010. Dr. Jones spoke of what it means to pass the Virginia Hamilton and Arnold Adolph Resource Center on the way to her office.
Oh, yes. You know, it is profoundly, you know, and deeply moving to walk past that every day. And it inspires me, it empowers me, and it helps energize me in my work as a writer and as an educator, and it shows how their legacies continue to live on.
Virginia Hamilton's legacy does continue to live on. In the spring of 2017, Virginia was honored with a historical marker placed in front of the Yellow Springs branch of the Greene County Public Library. It reads in part, "Her books have had a profound influence on the study of race throughout American history, the achievements of African Americans, and the ramifications of racism." And in January of 2018, she was honored yet again by the Capitol Square Foundation at the Ohio State House in Columbus with their Great Ohioan Award. She joins other notable Buckeyes, including Paul Lawrence Dunbar, John Glenn, Jesse Owens, the Wright brothers, and Annie Oakley. Always the trailblazer, once again, she is the first African-American woman to be so honored. But Virginia remains first and foremost a hometown hero, daughter of the fields and berry patches of Yellow Springs. Her story echoes from the woods on the western edge of the village, where Arnold still writes her love poems. My thanks to Arnold Adolph, Lee Hamilton Adolph, and Jamie Levi Adolph for their generosity in sharing memories of their beloved wife and mother. This special broadcast was made possible by the support of the Greene County Public Library. You can learn more about the legacies of Virginia Hamilton and Arnold Adolph and hear the archival tapes in their entirety at wyso.org. For Rediscovered Radio at WYSO, I'm Jocelyn Robinson.